Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesch of Flesch and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesch and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesch and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesch.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley, and we appreciate you being with us. Our show is once again brought to you by Flesch and Beck Law. FleschLawFirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, LawFirm.com. And their number, 303-806-8886. And once again, we welcome back attorney Kevin Flesch. Kevin, good to see you as always.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Now, look, I'll say this up front. When this airs, there could be some varying differences in what we're going to finish our topic from last week about with this Kyle Rittenhouse trial. But there were some very interesting things that happened in those first few days that the defense got involved that we were talking about last week. And we just kind of wanted to continue that because we've gotten a lot of questions about it. And just people that I've talked to have said, hey, ask Kevin about this and what this means, because I think we hear a lot of terms watching our court TV shows and police shows, and we really don't know what's happening. So, and Kevin, we were talking about the mistrial when we ended last week, and you know, something could have happened again by the date this airs. We are pre-taping here just a little bit early, but man, a courtroom dynamic is a pretty cool thing. I mean, if you're not on trial, I mean, just to watch what all, there's a lot of parts
yes.
that make it up, right?
Absolutely.
And man, when you first of all just think about just, you know, you guys, all the work you do for the case, and then, you know, working with your client and all, and then picking the jury. And then, I mean, how many jurors you think, if you just had to, they probably had to go through quite a few jurors.
Yeah, that case with the amount
wow.
of, so a normal case like that, minimum you'd have 75 people for a 12-person jury. My guess is they doubled that.
Yeah.
Because of the, and so, yeah, you're, I mean, even before you get to the jury selection, you've got to prep the case, because the idea with a jury is it's much like a movie. You're putting on an explanation of what took place, and mm-hmm. most people want, it's just not the facts, ma'am, sort of thing. You have to put on an extravaganza, so to speak, so that people keep their attention and they keep interested in it, and you make it something that jurors want to be interested in.
Right.
When we're dealing with a civil case, many times the idea is that you want to get those jurors to be concerned about your client and want them to like your client, and also, by the time you put on all of the evidence, you want them to be in a position where they want to do something for mm-hmm. your client. So that's, I mean, all of that is difficult work, because you've got to be persuasive, credibly persuasive, all the way through, so that you give them an understanding of why they're there, why it's important that they're there, why they should care. Because I've had trials where jurors just, they don't care. You know, they do their community service, and mm-hmm. they go through the process of getting to a conclusion in the case, but I've also had them, they just don't have any heart. And that's, you know, when that happens, I look at it and say, well, I didn't present the evidence well enough. Even if I lose, I want the jurors to be engaged, right? I don't want them to just be there, because we could have a computer,
sure,
you know, sort of plop. I mean, that's what insurance companies do a lot of times with their demands and their decisions on what they would provide for, in the way of a money settlement.
Oh, really?
They just put in, it's called Colossus or some derivative of that. And what it is it's a program that someone has put together that takes into consideration the medical expenses and what's happened and the body parts and how they've been affected and all of those sorts of things. And you put that data into a computer and it spits out a number. That's how insurance companies a lot of times start their claims process. And that's why we've talked in the past where I may get this offer of $17,432.21. Now, a human being isn't saying, oh, I'll pay you 21 cents, but I won't pay you more than 25 cents. You know what I mean? I mean,
sure.
All computer-driven. And that's sort of that artificial intelligence that we see happening. Well, jury trials aren't that. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the great part about jury trials is it's human beings making a decision. But what that means is that you've got to figure out the human beings that you don't know who are going to be there, what they're going to want to see and hear, and what they're interested in. And that's also the dynamic in a jury trial, is that with the jury selection, the voir dire portion of it is making decisions about, early on you try to figure out, what's the juror that I want? Right. What is this juror going to look like? I had a case a few years ago up in Boulder that it was an unfortunate situation where a couple had sex in a car in a parking lot after being in a bar and having a bunch of drinks. And the next morning, the female in the tryst said that it wasn't consensual. And it was one of those cases where I thought, if I had a jury in another, potentially in another county or another jurisdiction, they would be more empathetic to my client's plight, the defendant's plight in that situation. The folks in Boulder were not understanding of what took place or could fathom having that happen in that situation. And so that was a situation where you got to read the room once you get there and figure mm-hmm. out what the people are going to be like. But if your defense is going one way and the type of juror that you want is there, and all of the people that show up for that jury trial aren't that sort of person, you've got a real problem. The Rittenhouse is an example, too, where you don't know what sort of individual you're going to have come in. You don't know if you're going to have 150 people who are against guns mm-hmm. Or against the Second Amendment. They think it's an antiquated constitutional amendment, and they think it should be changed. They think that we don't need guns. You know, if you have the majority of those people on that jury, well, it's not going to matter what they're going to say. Self-defense is calling the police, not shooting the gun at somebody. And so that's also something that we as trial lawyers have to consider when we make a decision about going to trial in something. Something that could happen in Jefferson County, it's because that's sort of a mix of urban and mountains. Mm-hmm. If you get something that's gone on up in the mountains, it may be very different than if you were on Colfax and what people think is reasonable. And so that's a really interesting part of the process in making some decisions about how things go. So very dynamic process in the sense of the thing that I always say to people when they're talking about, well, what had this conversation with a client this week. Well, what do you think my chances are in this trial? And in this particular case, I'm dealing with his testimony and a testimony of the alleged victim. And I said to him, you know, the important thing to remember is, how compelling is that alleged victim going to be when they testify? Because they have to testify. And if they're compelling, are you going to be more compelling? And in this particular case, he has a felony conviction. The jurors are going to hear about your felony conviction. And how is that going to affect
them? So you can bring up the past with people in most cases.
As long as they testify. So a defendant's past doesn't come up against him or her unless they testify. And then if they have a felony conviction or some sort of conviction relating to moral turpitude, sort of theft, fraud, you know, the propensity to lie, mm-hmm. any of those sorts of things. If any of that is in their history, the jurors get to hear about it because you'd want to hear about it.
Sure.
If you're dealing with somebody in a business transaction, you want to know a little bit about their background.
Right.
It's the same way in a jury trial. And so those are the sorts of conversations that you have with people and making a determination as to whether they're going to be a good witness for you or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of the preparation before the trial. And that's mm-hmm. why there's the fun part of my job in talking about litigation is the actual trial, because you've kind of covered everything in preparation for it. You know sort of where things will go. And as you do this sort of work, there are some things that kind of repeat themselves in the process, so you understand how it's going to work. And then, as well, if you know the judge that you're going to be dealing with, you know how they're going to rule on some evidentiary issues maybe, or how they deal with their jury selection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some judges in the state courts that are really good at jury selection. They get the jurors talking, they get them comfortable, and that's a much more enjoyable process for the lawyers, because generally speaking, we don't get a lot of time. On a standard felony case, I'll maybe get a half hour to talk to 40 or 50 jurors.
Right.
You can't talk to anybody in a half hour to make a decision.
Sure.
Especially with that a number of people, and people are uncomfortable because they're in a big group. They don't raise their hand energetically normally. And the ones that do, you're like, okay, why are you so excited to be here, right? Because we're taking you out of your life and asking you to do things. So that's part of the experiential part of my job and what I do in helping people get through the process.
Mm-hmm. And I would think, boy, just watching this one, this case with Rittenhouse, probably one of the bigger changes over the last 10, 15, 20 years is how much video is being shown. You know, it used to be like a bag of something, you know, like a gun with a fingerprint or whatever. And now, man, you've got video everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's
it's good.
Good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the I think it's just good. It isn't, and it is. So from the standpoint of someone who's done something wrong and is trying to get out of it, it's not good for them normally, because if we've got a video of what you've done, it makes it very difficult to argue away. I think what it's gotten rid of is a lot of this gray area that people try to live in. And I think that's good in the sense that it resolves cases generally. And the cases that go to trial where you've got really good video and they're unwilling to dismiss the case, for example, it also helps in that, because jurors, you know, if it's credible video in the sense that it hasn't been modified and it's coming from a source that's corroborated and it's doesn't seem to be in any way, you know, videos don't have a you know, they don't have any reason to make it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, if it's a video off of a building, or the body cameras. The body cameras on police officers has changed the game relating to criminal defense in I think, a really good way.
Right.
I think it's made the officers more honest. They're not exaggerating as much as they used to. And if they do, you get the video to show it. People can look at it and make their own decisions. You're not just relying on an officer's perception of something anymore. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really helpful. It's helpful for me if I have a client that says this or that happened and I have a video that's completely contradictory, to bring the client in and say, okay, I hear what you're saying, but this is what we have for evidence. How are we going to deal with this?
Yeah.
And it's just a really good way to get things resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really helpful. I think it's reduced the amount of, at least what I see, the amount of situations. People still have perception maybe of racist comments and that sort of things going on, but it reduces the amount of that argument when you've got a video showing it. So I'm really happy to see police departments have sort of taken on the role of saying, okay, we're going to do that. And of course, there's a state statute that says that they have to.
Sure, sure.
I mean, the statute basically says that if you don't have, I think it's the beginning of 2023, if you don't have video from the police officer, basically the event didn't happen. I mean, that's basically what the statute says, that it's going to be really hard for police officers to credibly testify about an interaction with an alleged, with a defendant in a case without having that sort of video available.
Yeah.
And that it's presumed that they're not being honest, mm-hmm. which I think is completely unfair, but that's what the state statute is.
Sure.
And so it's good.
You're listening to Legal Talk with Attorney Kevin Flesh. Once again, our show is brought to you by Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. Always a free consult now on any legal matter with Kevin and his team. So if you have found yourself maybe in the middle of something and haven't done anything, or you've made a few calls, don't know what to do, give Kevin's office a call, 303-806-8886. You know, early on, the first few days when the fence came on, I heard one point them asking them, well, you brought your gun to and you shot him to kill him. And he said it perfectly, in my opinion. I did what I did to stop the threat.
Correct.
And that, I was like, have you listened to Legal Talk on KLZ 560? Because, I mean, that was the classic statement,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. I mean, that's what we always talk about, and especially in the classes with regard to, let's say you've shot someone in your house and you're calling 911 after it. And I'm the victim of a home invasion.
Mm-hmm.
I have resolved the threat. In other words, I have shot the person.
Right.
They are in the house. I mean, you give the details, and that's exactly right. It's not that you're the aggressor. You're responding to a credible, lethal threat, and you have every right to do that. especially in the case of the castle doctrine and being in your home. But in his situation, he was saying, I was just responding to the threat that I had in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I met that threat with reasonable force. And if the threat is lethal, then reasonable force is lethal force.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult island to be on. I mean, when you get there, I mean, this is the hill that Mr. Mm-hmm. Rittenhouse was willing to die on himself, because that's the situation that you put yourself in. I mean, we just saw it this week with regard to the Arvada shooting, too.
Oh, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean, what an awful situation. Man, the bystander, you know, that shot the real threat. I haven't seen all of the interactions with why exactly he had that gun in his hand. Mm-hmm. But that's the other thing that I tell people. As soon as the act is over, you get yourself away from any gun so that you aren't, because you now are in the crosshairs of individuals that are showing up at the scene, and they don't know who the good guy is.
And when it comes over the radio, possibly officer down or, you know, there's
public place.
I mean, I can't even imagine what goes through their mind when they're pulling up to a scene.
Oh, well, you know, police officers are trained for those sorts of things. But you're still a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're worried that they're going to be in crossfire and shot themselves, and they've got a buddy that's just been shot. I mean, it's really emotional for everybody involved. And so, would I like it so that our society wouldn't have these sorts of things? That'd be great, but that's not our utopian society that we have.
Sure.
It never has been, and never will be, quite frankly, because there's too many individuals out there, human beings, that want to do bad things and will do whatever they want to make sure those bad things happen. And so,
when you look at charges and stuff, I was reading on some things. It said there were five felonies, including, and they broke it down like this: first degree intentional homicide, mm-hmm. first degree reckless homicide, first degree attempted intentional homicide, possession of a dangerous weapon, being under 18. So, okay, it seems like there's one deal. He shot somebody, and you got all these first degrees of different motives?
Right.
Is that basically what that's describing?
Yeah. So it's whether or not, and it can be a moment in time that you've deliberated. So you've decided that you're going to pull the trigger. That's first degree. So it's a situation where the reckless would be that it's not reasonable, right? That you've acted with basically willful disregard for another person's rights.
Okay.
All right. So that's the reckless portion. The first degree is just that you've deliberated that you're going to do it, and that you knowingly did this with the belief that your actions would cause serious bodily injury or death in the case of a homicide. And so the next thing is the dangerous. I always love the dangerous weapon charge because all guns are dangerous, right? I mean, it doesn't matter whether. I've actually tried to make the argument. So, for example, Cabela's sells these flintlock kits that you don't have to go get a background check on. But under the statute, because it still emits a projectile out of it, it's considered a gun under the statute. So even if you're a felon, and you say, well, I'm protected because I went and bought this kit and I didn't have to get a background check, so it must not be a gun. Not the case. It's the same way with the dangerous weapon. All of them are dangerous. I mean, it all depends on whose hands it's in.
Sure.
I mean, it's just, so those are always quite humorous to me, because I've never seen a judge, because I've had one case where, that flintlock case, where I actually filed a motion saying, well, maybe this isn't a gun. Maybe it's not under the statute the definition. I was able to resolve the case because the DA really didn't want to go down that road and make a big deal of it. But it's the only time where I've sort of tried to make the argument that guns aren't dangerous, or that this particular device that's sold at Cabela's isn't a gun because of the way the statute is written. But I mean, it's pretty clear that any sort of kit or anything else, or any gun that emits a bullet, is going to be dangerous.
Sure.
So, pretty silly, but that's what it is.
You know, and I think another, I guess, lesson or something for all of us could look at is, I could picture at the end of this, no matter how it turns out, the judge looking at this Kyle Rittenhouse and saying, young man, you shouldn't have been there. You know,
right.
You shouldn't have got involved in some of the stuff. So it does make you thinking, yes, things have kind of calmed down on the rioting that was going around crazy. But you know what? You never know when you're going to find yourself in some situation. And boy, you got to do a lot of thinking really quick
of
how involved you're going to get. even if you've got a concealed carry and if you see someone with a gun or you see someone shooting somebody, mm-hmm. you don't know if that's a plainclothes cop dealing with a drug suspect
right.
and now you shoot and it happens again like what happened in our I mean, you don't know. So,
right.
boy, you got to think a lot through no matter with a gun, without a gun,
yep.
when to get involved and how much to go about it, right?
Training and experience. I mean, that's the bottom line with regard to that sort of situation. You have to be – it's not something – I mean, it's amazing to me because I was once 18 or 19 in Rittenhouse's situation. I can't imagine making that decision
well,
at that point.
Yeah.
And really understanding what I'm doing. Because, I mean, he's going to change – no matter the outcome of this mm-hmm. case, it's changed the trajectory of his life, period.
Sure.
I mean, it just has. It's just – you know, we all have certain roadblocks or T's in the road or Y's in the road with regard to our life story. His is a giant overpass from where he was going. Because, I mean, it's just, it's definitely one of those things. I mean, the Arvada is a good example. The person gave up their life. Did they ever think that morning when they woke up and with their concealed carry that they were going to get into a situation where they did the right thing? They've done everything right except hold a gun when an officer shows up and then get shot. And it's understandable why the officer didn't get any sort of charges against him. Mm-hmm. I completely understand why the
sure.
DA in Jefferson County made the decision that they did, because what do you do as a police officer? I mean, it's a difficult situation to be in.
Right.
So I think it's one of those things where we all have to consider what the consequences are when we go through this and how much you're willing to then defend yourself. Because that's – so we talk about – you know, we've just had Veterans Day and the fact that people have fought for our country. And,
right.
and Rittenhouse is doing that same thing in this courtroom with his lawyers. I mean, he's the point of the spear at this point, mm-hmm. relating to the argument, relating to the Second Amendment and what is reasonable, what isn't. And sort of having that, I would say, that dialogue nationally about sometimes you get bad situations
sure.
In all of these sorts of scenarios, and that's just the nature of sort of having a free society
mm-hmm.
and making sure that everybody understands that and they're comfortable with it, because some of the things that we do in this country are awful.
I
mean, when you really get down to
you're right.
The results are awful mm-hmm. based upon what's taken place. I mean, of course, the alternative is some of the things that folks that are in the more progressive side of the fence would say, well, it's too much. We got to get rid of it. But then on balance, you've got to consider what's right. And
right.
that's where, as conservatives, and being free and sort of the basic tenets of what our country is built on, if you believe in those things, these sorts of trials are really mm-hmm. important. Because of what they mean to the society. And that's why jury trials are so fantastic.
Sure.
Because, I mean, it's a microcosm of that particular location and those particular individuals making a decision. 12 people can make a huge, huge change
right.
in the way things are looked at and having conversations about it, both positively and negatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the thing that I think is so exciting about jury trials, other than, you know, being able to do them and helping people micro issue is the one. I mean, when you go to trial, 12 or 14 people are helping two parties, normally one or two people, make a decision about something that's really important to them that's not really important to the other people,
right? Right.
I mean, it's the greatest example of sort of self-sacrifice. And it happens every day in criminal cases when they have jury trials,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's either 6 or 12 people that are making a decision because the state can't make a decision on its own or the defendant can't. And it's not in the grand scheme of things, in the sense of society, not important in that one individual case, but the system is so important. And it's such a great example of how our system is and seems to continue to work
yeah.
on an individual. I mean, we saw it in the last elections, too, and how
sure.
things change and how the electorates are like, you know, we always get the pendulum swing from one way to the other, and it always seems extreme on both ends, right? But we get it because people are like, wait a second, you know,
mm-hmm.
this isn't right. We need to have some changes. And I think it's always a little slower than we'd like it to be. But in the end, I think jurors generally make the right decisions.
Right.
It's a long process many times.
Absolutely. So when you look at charges like this, when charges are made like this, first degree, it seems like there's a lot of room for plea deals because there's a lot less charges than that. So let me ask you this. at the end of this, and again, by the time this plays on air, something could have happened, but is it strictly a not guilty or guilty, or could they come back and try to plea down to something less?
Yep.
Before it goes,
yep.
If they see it going bad.
Yep. Generally speaking, in criminal cases, once you pick a jury, very rarely does the court allow for some sort of resolution of the case through a plea bargain.
Okay.
Because what happens is the constitutional right of the defendant is then attached relating to speedy trial and the other things relating to the jury trial. So there's generally a time period where if a plea deal is going to be done, it's going to be done a week, 2 weeks, a month before the jury trial actually starts. So you don't see a lot of times where in criminal cases the case is resolved while the case is being tried. Civil cases is a little different because you're generally just dealing with money. And so if things are going good or bad, the parties can have conversations and resolve the case during during the jury trial. That doesn't happen very often, but it does happen.
Right.
So that's certainly a possibility. So, but in the criminal cases like this, the other question that you have is what's called lesser included charges relating to the case. So when you have a first degree of anything, there's always lesser included charges that may not have as much in the way of mens rea or the mindset. So maybe it's not a knowingly, maybe it's a recklessly or some other standard that isn't quite as hard to prove, that a jury sometimes will sort of split the baby, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they'll say, you know what, and DUI is a good example. They can't prove the case that the person was driving beyond beyond a reasonable doubt that they were substantially incapable of driving. That's the DUI. But they could prove that they were affected to the slightest degree. And so they'll convict them of a DWAI. And it's up to the parties as to what lesser included charges are included in the verdict for the jurors.
Wow.
And so that happens, and that happens, and that's a negotiation in the jury room. And I've had lots of conversations with jurors about to get to unanimous verdict, they've had to take a lesser, or they've had to do something else, or they didn't charge for the largest charge, but they got them for a lesser or a completely different charge that was included in the jury.
Right.
Jury.
Man, it's fascinating,
it's
isn't
super
it?
Fascinating. Yep.
Wow.
Always good stuff.
And I bet when you walk out of a courtroom too, another minute here, but when you walk out of a courtroom, man. It's not like go home, have dinner, and watch TV. I mean, it's probably end of the night, even working on all the stuff that happened and getting ready for the next day, right?
Generally speaking, if we get a good result, that's always a great thing. If we don't get a good result, and I feel like we've done all that we can, that we've put on the best case that we can, I've done enough of them that I can sort of let it go a little bit. But you definitely have. It's like playing a sport.
Sure.
You know, getting done with the game, and you're sort of still kind of geeked up about it.
Yeah,
it's the same way with the trial. Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty interesting.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one to follow.
Yeah,
here.
Sure will be.
Absolutely. Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. Kevin, as always, we appreciate your time, sir, and look forward to next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us today. Once again, it is a free consult on any legal matter with Flesh and Beck Law, so give them a call, 303-806-8886, and thank you for being with us today for Legal Talk. Functional Medicine with Dr. Ben, coming up next.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleshlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298-191, Equal Credit Lender.
Hi, this is Chris Kane with 303roofer.com. If you're looking to put on a new roof because of hail, give us a call at 303-390-1382. We'll give you a cash price, which means you'll most likely get to keep some of your insurance money instead of giving it to us. It's your money, we know that, and we'll price the work accordingly. So give us a call today, 303-390-1382, or go to our website, 303roofer.com.
You're listening to AM 560, KLZ, your home station.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard, the show where you get healthy answers to all your health questions. I'm your host, Andy Pate, and we're brought to you by Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and soon to be Denver. Dr. Ben, how are you?
Doing great. It's a beautiful day. A little unnerving out there. You're like, it's November. It's not really supposed to be 70 degrees out, is it?
I know. I feel like I'm being baited. Like the moment I actually go outside, some front is going to move in.
I know, but we'll take it when we get it.
We'll take it when we get it. Hey, real quick, folks, if you have any questions, any health questions for Dr. Ben, just call us at 303-477-5600. It's just a half-hour show, so get those calls in soon. Okay, Dr. Ben, I want to talk dieting. And the reason I want to do this is I know everybody thinks about January 1st when that comes, they're going to start dieting. But I was thinking, what if we got a head start? And what if we put ourselves in the mode of January 1st and think, what do I wish I was doing for the last 2 months?
Yep, absolutely. And that it's great. And we were talking earlier about diet and you know what that term even means. And you know, the thought process of a diet, unfortunately, for most people is a temporary change, a temporary fix, a temporary, I went keto, vego, paleo, you know, whatever, you want to do. And then that was interesting, 30 days, 60 days, and then
right.
You kind of fade off and it comes right back. And so this is why diets fail. Diets are going to fail. You're going to January 1st, you're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go a whole day or a whole month without coffee or a whole month without sugar or alcohol or whatever it is. And there's a great book. Benjamin Hardy wrote that willpower doesn't work. And I mean, it's really true. You know, if we're just sitting there trying to be like, okay, I'm going to quit smoking and I'm not going to smoke. But if you go out and you're standing with all the rest of your coworkers and everybody's smoking and you're like, I'm not going to smoke. I'm not going to. Yeah, guess what? Today or tomorrow or the next day, eventually you're going to smoke. And so that's where willpower doesn't work. We have to change our patterns. We have to change our stimulation. We have to change our reasons, our whys. And that's where it ultimately comes down to where we get permanent changes. We get lifelong changes. And that's the thought process I want you guys to be having when you're thinking about a diet, a dietary change, a new, let's go off of sugar or whatever it is. It has to be a thing that we're committed to that's not just, okay, I want to lose 12 pounds so I can go to Florida for
right.
Christmas and you know get into my bikini or whatever it is. That is not going to sustain it. And health-wise, it can actually be more problematic and more damaging to go on these yo-yo diets that some people have been on all their lives and way back from the cabbage diet and the grapefruit diet and all of these different things.
Well, let me ask you, I'm going to ask you to play kind of amateur psychologist here for a moment, Dr. Ben. Why do we diet like we study for tests in college? Why do we cram? Okay,
yeah,
because I just figure, I know when I did that, I didn't retain what I learned. And when I try to cram on a diet, I don't retain the weight I lost. It comes back.
Yeah, Absolutely. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, sometimes it is just that we're trying to, will power through this. And that's, I guarantee you, very few people have said, January 1st, I set this intention, I set this New Year's resolution, whatever you want to call it, and 3 years from then, they're still doing the same thing. So, you know, a resolution, I'm going to commit to this, or my buddy's doing it, and we're going to the gym, and we're, you know, watching what each other's eating, whatever it is, it's not going to sustain. There has to be psychological changes, like you're talking about. It's got to be, your why has to be big enough. And that's why every new patient exam I do with people, just had a lady come in from Minnesota, and you know, with that, we were like, okay, what is your why? And, you know, I want to be vibrant again and be healthy like I used to be, and, you know, or somebody wants to play with their grandkids, or I don't want to be like my parents that had Alzheimer's, or whatever it is. So here's the psychology of it is we do things for two reasons. One is to go towards pleasure. So unfortunately, people go towards pleasure every single day with food, and that's hot fudge sundaes, and that's, you know, quick fixes at 7-Eleven or DoorDash. You can get anything, any hour of the day, whatever you want. So we can go towards pleasure that way. But if we're doing a positive change, we can go towards pleasure of, hey, I'm single and I would like to get a partner, a spouse, whatever it is. And I need to change how I look, and I'm a little bit overweight, or, you know, whatever it is. So going towards pleasure of that, going towards, okay, we've got that vacation coming up. I want to fit into certain clothes or whatever it is. So we'll go towards pleasure of that. But then there's also the going away from pain. So we do things for two reasons, going towards pleasure or going away from pain. And so going away from pain would be, I am so hurting every single day. My joints hurt. You know, I just feel stiff and bloated and horrible. You know, I can't even get into my pants. I really don't want to go buy a whole bunch more clothes. You know, that as a kid, you know, people are making fun of them. Whatever it is, you know, we go away from pain. We don't want to get Alzheimer's. We don't want to get cancer, diabetes, whatever those issues are. And so we'll go towards pleasure. We'll go away from pain. And with that, those whys have to be big enough to sustain it. So for me, you know, I just ate some cauliflower rice, sardines, salsa, and avocado on there. And, you know, for some people, they're going, ooh, and I don't, you know, that sounds horrible. But for me, that's just how it goes. And I've been the same body weight for the last 15 years. I was just going through all my injuries. I've broken a wrist, broken an ankle, hyperextended an elbow that's crooked now. I hyperextended a knee, low back issue, a bunch of things. But I wake up every single morning, jump out of bed, get on the treadmill, go work out, do everything, get through the day, have energy, and that is a driving force. I got four boys. I'm going towards that pleasure of, I want to be able to spend time with them and go run around, and we're going to go shoot white-tailed deer next week, and then, you know, go fishing. Whatever we want to do, I want to be able to be there with them. And so that's what drives me every day, is to be able to get up and be the best I can be. And it's got to that point psychologically where I want that pleasure more than I want the pleasure of the hot fudge sundae.
Well, and I think that's really important for you and your sons, because there's only two options, Dr. Ben. Either you guys have to be really fit, or you somehow have to convince the entire whitetail population to get fat and slow down. And I don't think you're going to be able to do that. It just sounds to me like what you're saying is your why has to be greater than your daily why nots that are going to keep coming at you. And really quick, folks, I think the best way to get a head start on 2022 is to contact Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins. Their phone number is 970-282-1173, or you can go to fmcenters.com, and Dr. Ben can get you that head start. Because Dr. Ben, I just think people are going to be panicking come January 1st if they've done nothing for the last 2 months and they've got the summer coming a little too quick for bikini weather.
Absolutely. And this is my favorite patient to get started with, is somebody that starts in like late October, mid-November, and like, okay, we're going to be doing a cleanse when, and we're going to be taking out what? through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, through New Year's, and they lose 15, 20 pounds by the time New Year's comes around. Everybody else is bemoaning, oh, my gosh, I put on all this extra weight. I'm not feeling good. And they're down 20 pounds, and people are like, dude, what are you doing? You look awesome. Your color's better. Your clothes are falling off. You had to put on your suspenders because your pants are falling down, whatever it is. And he's like, who loses weight during the holidays? Well, people that are getting their bodies healthy. Because remember this, there is no weight loss plan. There is no diet. There's no magic bullet that's going to get somebody healthy. Weight is the symptom of ill health. Weight is not the cause. And so if you think about it that way, we have to change our underlying health status or disease status to be able to lose weight. And yes, you can starve yourself. You can do the HCG diet where people eat only 500 calories a day, you know, some extreme things. But those people are going to gain their weight right back. So you have to figure out your underlying health issues, and then the body can start losing that weight.
Hey, let me ask you something. By the way, folks, one size does not fit all with dieting. Okay, it's not the same for everybody. That's why you need someone like Dr. Ben to actually test your sugar levels and test everything about your personal body so we know what to do with your personal body. But Dr. Ben, I got to ask you a question here. How do you break people free from that feeling of history is destiny? Like, I failed before, I'm going to fail again. What's the point? How do you break them free from that and help them understand, I don't care if you failed a million times, you're about to succeed?
Yeah. So in practice, it's easier than just, you know, me telling you over the radio, hey, you got this. You're going to get through this, this dip in your cycle and your weight and all those things. What we do in practice is we take people by the hand and we have weekly appointments. We touch base with text and emails and whatever communication people need. We take them step by step through that process, as opposed to, okay, here's your new diet, or here's these five bottles of supplements, go take all these pills for the next 2 or 3 months, we'll see you down the road. So most people that come to us have failed. Most people that come to us have tried other things. They've been to 8 doctors. They've heard it on the radio or a podcast, or they've read certain things, and they are going to continue to fail if they just keep trying these one little thing here, one little thing there. And so what we look at is, can we go through and figure out which systems are out of balance? Yes, we know how to do that. We do a very in-depth blood panel. We look from our healthy range, not just from the lab range of the average sick person. We do a brain map. We do a very thorough examination, neurologic, metabolic, looking at all these things.
One second.
Oh, yeah.
Take a step back.
Okay, go ahead.
Define the brain map again.
Yeah.
Because that one, that just scares me.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll find more in some people's brains than others.
yes.
So the brain map, it's an EEG, kind of like an EKG of the heart. So if you put those electrodes on your heart, you've seen on Grey's Anatomy or whatever, and you put those electrodes on and you figure out the electrical activity of the heart. That's what we're figuring out with the brain, and there's certain brainwave patterns that we're looking at. So we're looking for sleep. We're looking for, we can tell ADD, anxiety, depression, autism, Alzheimer's, all types of different things. We can tell what is going on in somebody's brain. And for a lot of people, when you're talking about health issues, if somebody's in a chronic fight or flight pattern, you can do one thing or the other. You can't fight or flight and rest and digest at the same time. So people come in and they've had chronic digestion issues for years, and they've got constipation or diarrhea, or they're not breaking food down, or they're getting bloated or gassy or whatever it is, and they've tried changing their diet and enzymes and all these different things, but it's really more of a brain thing, and that their body is in this chronic fight or flight, and they'll never be able to digest like they need to. So that's why we look at the brain map. How much of what's going on in the body is not even metabolic, but more brain neurologic related, and then there's ways that we can help change those patterns as well.
Okay, what do you mean by the body is in its fight or flight? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so you know, when that mountain lion's gonna come and attack you, right? No, you probably haven't been attacked by a mountain lion lately.
Well, just so you know, just for the record, I would not catch the deer like your son. Okay, I'm just saying. So I don't think I would do too well with the mountain lion.
So up here in Fort Collins, there's this little mountain outside of town here called Horsetooth.
Right.
And there was a guy a couple of years ago up there, trail runner, kind of hardcore guy, and this big, quote-unquote, baby mountain lion. And I'm like, I don't care. A 50-pound mountain lion, that's still a mountain lion.
Yeah.
Have you ever been scratched by a house cat? You don't want a mountain lion scratching you. So this mountain lion jumped on this guy and was kind of stalking him, jumped on him. The guy actually killed the mountain lion with his bare hands, drove himself to the hospital, and they stitched him up and everything else. And so I don't know if you or I are quite manly enough to do that or not, but, you know, in that moment, we'd find out, I guess.
I would call a cop and ask him to write that mountain lion a ticket.
Well, you know, depends which city you live in. I don't know if you'd be able to get a hold of any or not.
Probably wouldn't get any. No. Okay.
there's very few people that can actually say they've been attacked by a mountain lion or even truly had life or death situations in their life ever. You know, most people have not, you know, besides maybe a car accident or something like that. But as far as like, man, I just had to sword fight to the death with somebody, you know, those things don't happen. But for us in today's society, you know, we are constantly on the go. We're worried about jobs and cars and kids and COVID and presidents and, you know, anything else you want to worry about, Andy, that's on your list?
Yeah, thanks for helping.
Yeah. You know, so we've got everything and anything we can worry about. And I mean, even just think about going to the smoothie shop and you're like, holy cow, there's 50 different varieties of smoothies and which one do I want to do? Oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming. Like every single thing in our life is a decision. Now, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, you could get a Model A or a Model T, or you could get, you know, you marry Susie down the next farm or Sally at the other one. You know, do you want to be a barber like dad, or do you want to, you want to go in the military, whatever it is? So like, we have gotten so much, and this is, you know, it's basically analysis paralysis here. And so people are just so overwhelmed. That's why you ask a 17, 18, 20 year old kid now, what do you want to do? And they're just like, there's so many options. Well, and, you know, it's just, life is overwhelming.
Well, that's part of what I'm getting to, Dr. Ben. Right now, when it comes to dieting, getting back to dieting, we are faced with a million options, and every single one of them has a book or video that says theirs is the right way. And that's why I kind of want people to come to you and maybe understand, don't go for the latest video or book. Actually, and you have videos and books, but you seem to treat every person as an individual and find out what's best for them.
Actually, I am going to tell everybody to go buy my last book,
The
Sugar Doesn't Lie. But on that one, you'll be disappointed because there is no diet. There is no menu. There is no meal plan. I could have made the book like three times as long and had all this stuff in there, but I'd be lying because there is no magic diet. If I said, hey, I did a video a couple months ago on Facebook and I said, I haven't given out a diet in years, but if I was going to give one, it'd be like this. It was actually a bunch of people watched it. It was kind of funny, but you know, it was like, okay, well, this is kind of how I eat and what I found, but still, like, I just had a couple, that we work on. And, what they found was that sweet potato makes their blood sugar go up, but white potato doesn't. And if anybody's looked into the food world, they know that people recommend sweet potato all the time and that white potato is bad for you. So, you know, it's way more individualized than we've ever known.
That is really weird. You're right, because I had always heard sweet potatoes are the way to go. I got to be honest, I don't like them. I like white potatoes. That's kind of my thing. My wife likes sweet potatoes. It's a source of great marital strife, just so you know. Hey, I want to talk for a moment once again on diets, drugs and supplements. Now, by the way, I'm not against drugs and supplements. I think they have a lot of good things that they can offer. I take vitamins and supplements every day, but it just seems to me that people who are trying to diet through these things are trying to do it. They're trying to cram for finals. They're trying to do it without changing their lifestyle.
Yep. So here's a simple thought for you. You cannot out-supplement poor diet. And that's as simple as it goes. You cannot. If somebody has high cholesterol and it's from how they're eating, they cannot just take the natural cholesterol-lowering supplement, red yeast rice extract, whatever right. it is they're taking, that will not do it. You know, get this. There's blood sugar supplements all over the place. People sell them online, late-night TV, these things. I've got a doctor up here training from our Nashville office, and she was asking about blood sugar supplements. I go, I probably haven't given one to a patient in over probably 2 or 3 years. We don't, and that's kind of my shtick is like, hey, we're going to balance your blood sugar. And I haven't given a supplement for that in years. And so we fix why that blood sugar is out of balance. We get their body stabilized, and then those miracles start taking place. And so that's the fun part about this is, yes, you know, supplements can be helpful. And if somebody's got some bad bacteria or yeast in their gut, we're going to have to do some kill off and then maybe add some probiotic back in. But, you know, if they go back, so quick little example here. It's a little bit graphic, so stick with me here. Have you ever heard of a fecal transplant?
No, I have not. You know, I've made it through life this far, but now you're going to do this to me. Go ahead.
So you got to YouTube this. Well, actually, I don't know. I've never looked, but
okay.
A fecal transplant, if somebody gets C. diff, which is an antibiotic-resistant bacteria, they get in the hospital, and, like, people die from it all the time, and it's antibiotic-resistant, so bacteria do not get affected by the antibiotics. So they do what is called a fecal transplant, where you take fecal matter from a healthy person, put it into that person with C. diff, and they get better. And this is standard of care now. I had a patient at Iowa State a couple years ago. He had it done twice in 1 year, you know, even middle of nowhere in Iowa. And so this is standard of care. Look it up, fecal transplant. But get this, there was a study done where they took people and they flip-flopped fecal transplant. So not just from a healthy person to a sick person, but between two people. And one group.
Wait, whoa. You're saying they moved fecal matter of some sort? Like,
yes.
I don't understand.
So that's the fecal transplant. So they take fecal matter from a healthy person and put it into the sick person with C. diff, and it saves their life. So I could have a whole radio show just on fecal transplant and the microbiome and all that. But so stick with me here. So you've got two groups of people, optimal weight people and overweight people. And they not just flip-flop from the healthy person to the sick person. They go both ways with that fecal transplant. And you know what? The weight and the belt sizes flip-flop between those two people.
Wow.
But get this. After 6 months, the people that had lost the weight that had gotten the fecal transplant from the optimal healthy weight people, their weight dropped down. But after 6 months, it went right back to where it was because they continued kind of like the you ever done a radio show about people that win the lottery and then lose.
Right. And they're broke in a couple of years.
Yeah, exact same thing, because even if you're like, oh, my gosh, I won the lottery and I lost 20 pounds. And just by, you know, putting somebody's poop in me, you know, I lost all this weight because my microbiome and my gut is better. They gained the weight right back because they did not change their habits. Their willpower wasn't enough to overcome this. Their why, they didn't figure out their why and get past that point of the pain and the immediate gratification of, you know, oh my gosh, I gotta eat that and have that sweet thing come in, or I need my coffee with all this, you know, 1200 calories of mocha latte, peppermint, whatever it is in there. And so they didn't fix their why, and that weight came right back. And so this is the same thing with why diets don't work, is because people did not change their why. Even if we went in and did a liposuction and pulled out all the fat of somebody, they would still go back. You look at people that get the gastric bypass. Have you ever heard that story?
Yeah,
where they get that? And then they go back, and they can only eat a little bit, and then they eat a little bit, and they stretch it out and stretch it out and stretch it out, and all of a sudden they put 150 pounds back on.
Right. Okay, hey, folks, we're talking to Dr. Ben Galliard of the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins. Their phone number, 970-282-1173, or you can find them at fmcenters.com. And Dr. Ben, when we close out here, we got about 4 minutes. I want to ask about this whole balancing blood sugar, and here's what I mean. When people think that they want to get a head start, right, on January 1st, start now, they think imbalance. I need to eat way less. I need to get out of balance in the opposite direction of what I've been doing wrong. So when they hear about balancing blood sugar, it sounds like, geez, is that really going to be enough?
You know what's crazy? I say this all the time. My guess, and this is an educated guess, is that 90% of chronic conditions, chronic health conditions, cancers and heart disease and Alzheimer's and all these different things, 90% of those could be prevented or reversed if all we did was figure out how people could stabilize their blood sugar. It is that important, that crucial. We see people lose 5, 10, 15, 20 pounds in the first month just by getting their blood sugar stabilized.
But it's not the same for every person, right? I mean, you don't balance the blood sugar exactly the same for every single person. They need to be tested. They need to be looked over, correct?
Absolutely. So for years, we used just a little basic $50 finger prick glucose monitor, and we were able to help people reverse their diabetes in as little as 6 to 8 weeks. They'd figure out why it went up, why it went down, eat more of the good stuff, less of the bad stuff, and all of a sudden their diabetes is gone. And which a lot of people are like, really? You can reverse, and we're talking type 2 diabetes, that you can reverse type 2 diabetes. But every person, like you were saying, every person is unique. Every person is different on what they can eat. Some people, they cannot eat a single piece of fruit without their blood sugar spiking up. Other people can eat half to a whole banana and be fine.
Can you also, like, tell people what fruits will spike it more for that person?
No, I cannot. I don't have the crystal ball, but we have the crystal ball with our glucose monitor. And that,
there you go.
Even with our patients, we use what's called a continuous glucose monitor, which is a device that goes on the skin, and at every 5 minutes, it's telling your phone what your blood sugar level is, so you don't have to poke your finger anymore. And we get instant feedback, and you're like, holy cow, that's what I feel like when I'm low. That's what I feel like when I'm high. And as those things change, you're going to learn, and it's really just a feedback reward system. So you go, feedback, it's going up. Don't do that anymore. It's staying in good range. Do more of that. And it's really simple. We could literally reverse almost every single case of type 2 diabetes in this country if people would learn this style and do what they need to do.
You know, and we got a little over a minute left here, Dr. Ben. I think a lot of people, though, get afraid of the whole idea of lifestyle change because they think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to do this well for a while, but I'm surrounded by others who haven't lifestyle changed and they're going to drag me back in and I'm just going to fail again. Once again, my history is my destiny. It sounds like you can guide them out of that.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's easy to go, oh, you just, again, willpower out of that. But no, you've got to have the right team on hand. Iron sharpens iron. And if you're around people, even our team that's guiding you and giving you this strength, if you're around people that can show you and teach you and support you, that is how you're going to make these massive changes and keep them forever. You know, that your body has the potential to be healthy. That deer that we're going to go shoot, or hopefully three or four of them next week, you know, those deer are not running around with diabetes, with cancer, with glaucoma, and all of these other quote-unquote human diseases, which is the worst phrase in the English language.
Right.
Human diseases is horrible. You know, dogs get those. Well, dogs shouldn't get human conditions either. Humans shouldn't get these human diseases. We have the potential to be healthy, and that's what you need to take massive action on. Today, get your health back because your body knows what to do, and if given the right things, you can do it.
It is time to get a couple months ahead instead of cramming for finals. I love it. Folks, you've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben Galliard, brought to you by Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins, Nashville, and soon to be Denver. To contact Dr. Ben and his great staff, just call 970-282-1173, or you can go to fmcenters.com, or, gotta get this, follow him on Facebook at F8 Well Centers of Colorado and Tennessee. Dr. Ben, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next Thursday.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.
The health advice and opinions on this broadcast are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent the views of this station, Crawford Broadcasting Company, its staff, management, or sponsors.